Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 70, we discuss how Fox has screwed up the World Cup before a ball is kicked, our first impressions of ESPN Plus, what percentage of TV soccer viewing in the US goes to Major League Soccer, big news for Scottish Premiership fans, as well as some eye-opening TV viewing numbers. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaya. Kartik, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Chris.
Well, for me, to be honest with you, Kartik, I did not sleep that much last night. The news broke yesterday on Wednesday about the commentators for the World Cup by Fox. And throughout the night, I was just thinking in terms of, I mean, a whole bunch of different angles as far as what they could have done, I mean, and kind of who they missed out on. And that was going through my head. And also kind of, to me, kind of what a disservice this is really to soccer fans, to the core soccer fan base in the United States. So rather than go into what we've been watching right away, let's kick off with the news from Fox and let's talk about that. So the news is that the lineups have been announced for the commentators for the World Cup. So let's start off there with the news first, and that is that we're going to have commentary teams. So the first commentary team, which is going to be the lead team, is going to be John Strong and Stuart Holden. They'll be in Russia commentating for the World Cup there for Fox. The second team, also in Russia, will be JP Della Camera and Tony Miola. They'll be working together in Russia, calling the opening game, as well as other select games. Then Fox has decided to go ahead and for the other teams, the commentary teams, all of them are going to be based in Los Angeles and all of them are going to be calling the games off the monitor. We've got Derek Ray and Ali Wagner, Glenn Davis and Kobe Jones, Jorge Perez Navarro and Mariano Trujillo. And then last but not least, Mark Folwell and Warren Barton. Now, Kartik, when I heard this news, there's a few different levels to look at it on this one. So when I heard the news, the first thing I thought about was, okay, let's think about these commentators in general. So obviously, Fox, with the U.S. men's national team crashing out of the World Cup qualifying, Fox has gone the path of making cuts, making drastic cutbacks. So, but before we go into kind of Los Angeles versus Russia, I mean, that's what they've done. So I know one of my sources had revealed that they were in discussions last year with a couple of the top commentators from around the world to bring them in. But with the U.S. crashing out of the World Cup, I guess it's understandable that they're going to try to cut corners and just save money and have mostly a very familiar Fox Sports crew and use the current crew that they have, with the exception of Derek Ray, for example. They're bringing in a special for this, as well as maybe Ali Wagner. She does some women's games now and again. But for me, if you look at the lineup, I mean, John Strong and Stuart Holden, to me, are, in terms of the U.S., commentators, two of the best. I mean, John Strong is definitely, to me, I prefer John Strong over Ollie White. Stuart Holden is getting better and better. And as we've seen in the Champions League and other games, he's been strong. JP Telecamera has been always a kind of a veteran in a good way, always a professional and has been good. Tony Miola, I'm not so hard on in terms of his co-commentating. I think Fox could have done better there, but it is what it is. Derek Ray, Ali Wagner, I'm really happy about the partnership there. Ali Wagner's been very promising. And Derek Ray, we know as a true professional, has been around a long time. Glenn Davis and Kobe Jones. Glenn Davis is okay. You're not going to get anything special from him. It's pretty cut and dry. Kobe has been hit and miss. We've had some games. The last 2 years of this podcast, we've been talking about these commentators in great detail, and Kobe's one of the ones that some games is good, other games is not so good. So kind of a weak spot there. And then you got Jorge Perez Navarro, which to me has been a train wreck for Fox on the Mexican broadcasts. He means well. He's got a fantastic goal call, but English is not his first language, and he's all over the place. Mariano Trujillo tries to help as best as he can. But again, English is not his first language either, so it's a very broken English commentating when you have him on board. Mark Folwell, I think, Kartik, I think you like him personally. He sounds too much like a baseball commentator. not so hot on. And Warren Barton, actually Warren, I've been probably one of the biggest critics of Warren in many years, but he's getting better, but still, is this the best the Fox can do? So Kartik, there's my spiel as far as the commentators. What are your thoughts in terms of the talent itself?
Yeah, I think that there is a lot of good in this commentary team, but I personally, let me register a complaint here to Fox that Brian Dunseth, that they're going to be promoting American voices and American commentators, Brian Dunseth not being on this commentary team in some regard really bothers me. I think he's top three, top five American voices on soccer, and obviously a lot of people are familiar with him through his work on Sirius, maybe more familiar through Sirius than through Fox, because he hasn't gotten the reps, if you will, the opportunities. And I'm very disappointed he's not part of this team. And Fox has used him as kind of a utility co-commentator or even in the studio at times when they needed him. So that's a disappointment for me. I love the Derek Ray, Ali Wagner pairing. I just don't like the fact that they're going to be in Los Angeles and think that that's taking something away from obviously their commentary. Followill and Barton might be an okay team. The Davis, Kobe Jones team. I mean, Glenn Davis is going to have to step up and carry Kobe Jones. Glenn Davis has called World Cups before. He's been off of monitors. He was for ESPN in 2006. I think he was the fourth or fifth team working with Chet Messing and having to work under these similar circumstances. The top team strong in Holden. No complaints there. No problems there. Glad they're going to be at the venues. Della Camera and Miola. I think there's a debate going on among people I talk to. Miola seems to have just been kind of shoehorned as a replacement for Brad Friedel, former U.S. goalkeeper, you know, kind of similar style. But I'm not sure Miola is as far along as an analyst as Friedel was. So we'll see. But obviously, JP is one of the best in the business from the American perspective. So the commentary teams themselves, Chris, I'm disappointed by the omission of Dunseth. I've been really kind of angry about the omission of Dunseth. And I would have liked to have seen maybe even if you're going to go with this kind of American voice, I know she's Canadian, but maybe bring Rachel Benetti in on that fifth or sixth team, since that's only going to be a few games and that's going to be off of monitors and she has a different kind of style. But I don't have that many complaints, but then the way they're covering the World Cup, which I know we're going to get to in a minute, that is where we have to have this point of discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been most of the complaints from us and also across social media, which erupted yesterday after the news was broke. But before we go there, I do want to mention that two of the arguably the strongest team, basically commentator and co-commentator, based in the US and not on this list. And those two people are actually employed by Fox Sports. The first person is a co-commentator. A lot of people love him. A lot of people hate him, but Eric Winalda. And Eric Winalda is not included at all with Fox's World Cup coverage. He's not as a co-commentator. He's not as a studio analyst. He's not as a reporter on the sideline. Nothing. And that is a travesty. And that, to me, really says that it's all political. Because you got Winalda, who's under contract with Fox Sports, is one of the best people at reading a game, at really kind of looking at a game, and from a manager's point of view, from a coach's point of view, being able to communicate what's happening on the pitch. And he's been at times frustrating, but oftentimes illuminating when he's been on his game. And for him not to be included, that says to me that Fox Sports is playing the political game. They don't want to upset Major League Soccer or U.S. Soccer Federation. And by not including him because he ran against the establishment, that's a crying shame. The second thing, Kartik, is Keith Costigan. Keith Costigan, to me, is one of the best commentators at Fox Sports. Now, Keith, for a lot of people, I think probably kind of think back and probably people kind of joke about him being on, say, the Fox Football Friday show, and kind of they think of him as that Keith. That was a long time ago. That was probably, what, a couple of decades ago almost. But to me, Keith is one of the best commentators that Fox has. He's basically a student. He's a scholar of the game. If you listen to his commentaries on the Bundesliga, you can see how good he is and how far along he's come. And to me, he's neck and neck there with John Strong. He's got a completely different style than John Strong, but Keith Costigan should be included on this list. Why they've not included him, I have no idea. Maybe they were going with the try to paint kind of have an all-American type of commentary and talent team there. But then that doesn't explain why Derek Ray's on there. So it's a really strange decision by Fox Sports. I think the Wynalda thing, I can understand from a political point of view. I'm upset with that. But to not have Keith Costigan on there, I think that's I don't know what Fox is thinking. And that's the thing about Fox. This is such a Fox decision. This is Fox. I mean, this is something that I was surprised. A lot of people on social media were not surprised. I was surprised by this because I just thought that they would have at least tried to raise the bar a little bit, maybe bring in a couple of people, some new names, some surprises. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but there you go. Any thoughts on the Costigan Wynalda omission, Kartik?
Yeah, we have to get more information about the Wynalda situation, so I'm going to pass judgment on that at this point. I think that there are assumptions made by people who like Wynalda about things, and I'm not sure if they're accurate or not. They might be accurate.
Well, let me put it out there. They're accurate. So basically, everything I've said right there is accurate, based on a few different sources. So.
Well, I don't know the other side of the story because I mean, look, there's. Well, we'll move on from that topic, and then on Costigan, I completely agree. I'm surprised. I actually thought Costigan, even if he's not a commentator, would have some role, some sort of major role in this World Cup coverage, even if it's as a studio analyst. Even if it's as the person they send from each venue who's traveling every day of the World Cup.
Sideline reporter.
Yeah, well, this whole concept of sideline reporters, which they're bringing into this thing, is unnecessary, particularly because you just don't get that kind of level of access from FIFA at these FIFA events.
Right.
I don't know. I can't explain the Costigan admission, especially because he's done so many things now on various soccer-related programming for Fox. He seems to be their go-to guy, yeah. Beyond John Strong in so many ways.
And we saw that this week, though, too. We saw that with the Liverpool-Roma game. He was right there on the sidelines interviewing Jamie Carragher, post-match doing interviews with can't remember which one of the players.
Because we're going to get into this, obviously, when we go over what we've watched, what we're watching this week. But I thought it was just a terrible decision by Fox not to send John Strong and Stu Holden to Anfield and then to the Allianz the next day. Now, of course, we know that they're losing the Champions League rights. They go to Turner, the English language rights go to Turner, the Spanish language rights go to Univision next season or immediately, really, in June, July. So their commitment level isn't there. But still, I think it would have been good to get, particularly with that kind of atmosphere. The atmosphere at Anfield will be better than any atmosphere in the World Cup. Get John Strong and Stu Holden the reps, if you will. Again, using kind of an American sporting coach speak, get them the reps in that kind of atmosphere in this situation. They missed that opportunity. And obviously they're probably not going to send them to Rome next week or send them to the Bernabeu. So that's that. Yeah. Basic. The opportunity, I understand, they're at least having them call games to get ready for the World Cup, but they're calling games off a monitor again.
Exactly. So those names are not the end of the world. But this next thing is, I mean, almost, maybe not so much that, but it's a horrible mistake, is that Fox has decided that out of those teams, that it's only John Strong and Stuart Holden, JP and Tony Miola, that are going to Russia. All of the other games, the vast majority of the games are going to be called off the monitor in the LA studio. So you're going to have Derek Ray, Glenn Davis, Jorge Perez Navarro, Mark Followell, etc., calling those games from a very sterile atmosphere in the studios in Los Angeles. And to me, this is the biggest shame of the whole story, is that you lose so much. You lose so much of the atmosphere of what's happening at matches. And we saw that in last week's podcast. We talked about it. One of the commentators sent us in the email and said about the Barca-Roma game is that there's no way that you can capture the atmosphere in an authentic way and communicate that to the listeners by calling the game off the monitor. If you're at the stadium, you're seeing what's happening. Sometimes it's off camera. Things are happening. You're capturing the emotion. And for Fox to go ahead and decide that most of the games are going to be called off the monitor, which is the same TV screens, the same images that we're seeing, they're calling, it's worse than a travesty. It's just an embarrassment, Kartik.
Yeah, and again, I mean, this is a thing. Ali Wagner, I think you have a quote from her or sentiments from her in the World Soccer Talk piece, where she said it's challenging. It is more difficult. She calls games every week for Lifetime, NWSL games at the site of the match. Derek Ray is accustomed. Now, Derek Ray has actually some familiarity with calling off monitors from the days when ESPN did most of their soccer coverage off monitors from Bristol. But more recently, we've seen him at the sites of matches, be it Bundesliga matches or games for NBC, just this past weekend, right, with Kyle Martino. That was 2 weekends ago, doing a match with Kyle Martino, a Liverpool match at Anfield. So it's such an underutilization of talent. I mean, I was excited when I saw the Ray-Wagner pairing, and then you read on another paragraph, you realize, oh, well, I mean, they had to fox it, right? Because you're thinking, okay, they did something really right with that commentary combination, and you're realizing, oh, well, they're going to be in Los Angeles. Yeah, there was just no excuse for this, because I think if you look back at ESPN's most recent World Cups. Now, in 2006, they did have games called off monitors from Bristol, and we saw Derek Ray actually call a few games off monitor from Bristol in the 2016 Euros. And in some cases, one or two cases was because of the issues going on in France, the labor issues at the time of the Euro 2016 tournament. So they had that contingency in place. And he and Kate McGrath had to call one or two matches, as I remember correctly. But if you look at the 2010 and 2014 World Cups, Chris, there were very few matches called off monitors by ESPN talent. And those that were, I think, were called from the International Broadcast Center. So right. You actually had the talent in Russia. So that way they can contribute to other aspects of the coverage. Now, Russia is a big country. Right, or much like Brazil, and sometimes it wasn't cost effective or just wasn't practical given the quick turnaround of schedules in a tournament to send all of the ESPN talent to each venue. I get that. That could Fox has the same sort of gripe about Russia, which, by the way, they will not have about Qatar, because Qatar, everything will be close to one another. But they're not even doing that. They're not even utilizing the IBC. They're not even utilizing the possibility of taking Derek Ray, Ali Wagner, Mark Folwell, Warren Barton, putting them in Moscow, letting them call games off monitors from the IBC with the world feed, et cetera. But then having them contribute to Fox's general coverage of a month-long extravaganza on site. So this is almost like the white flag of surrender from Fox.
Yeah, and I think that's what I said in the article too, is that it's as if Fox has already thrown in the towel on this World Cup and said, US is not in it. We don't think it's going to get great ratings. And so let's cut back. Let's cut back our budgets as much as possible, because originally maybe we overspent or over budgeted. Now we have to pull it back because we don't anticipate this World Cup being that great of a hit in the TV ratings and advertising dollars side of things.
I have to point something else out on this. Maybe this is extraneous, maybe it's not. I did find it alarming, and we've talked about this on this show before. I did find it alarming Fox, or 21st Century Fox, was packaging so many properties and selling them off to Disney, which to me indicated there were greater financial problems than maybe we think within that company. Now, obviously, there's a transition with Murdoch's Sons, et cetera. But maybe this is just an indication that Fox Sports and 21st Century Fox aren't as healthy financially internally, or need to do certain things internally to maintain whatever financial health they have, because there are bigger problems around the corner. And I do understand that this World Cup is not going to get the kind of ratings it would have if the U.S. were in it. That having been said, I think they're just incentivizing the people who would remain, because we've seen ESPN's ratings for the Euro. Let's just take a combination of Euro ratings plus people who watch Copa Americas in the U.S. Mexican football. And just if you put that all in a pot, you're still getting a decent number. You're getting numbers probably equivalent to the NBA Major League Baseball, their playoffs, maybe not their finals, but their playoffs. So it's still a big event. But I think maybe there is a greater issue with Fox. Now they have to fend off a bid from Comcast for Sky. So I don't know. Maybe there's something internally at 21st Century Fox that is and they have the cover now, the U.S. not qualifying.
It seems to be that way, Kartik, because it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you're a Fox and you're looking at all your line items for all the things you've budgeted for in 2018 and 2019, the World Cup is going to be one of those biggest line items. And you mean, if you're one of the executives or the bean counters at Fox, you might go to that and say, okay, let's figure out some ways to cut some costs here so the books can look better, so that... whether there is any type of future buyout or if there's any financial auditing, that the books can look as good as possible. It just doesn't make sense, though, Kartik, because, I mean, yes, I know that the TV ratings are not going to be as good without the United States in the World Cup, but I don't think they would be that bad. I mean, I think it's one of those things that we've seen with the Euros. You mentioned the Euros example a minute ago. The Euros against Copa America, I think it was the Copa America Centenario, both of them were played at the same time. And we did the comparison to see who got the greater ratings, who got the most number of viewers. And it was the Euros on ESPN. Yeah. Greater than the Copa America that was on U.S. soil with all these teams from Argentina, Brazil, etc., playing on our doorstep. And it does not make sense. That's the thing, too. I mean, that's... with Fox is that I don't know if maybe for example, I don't know if it's the actual studio set that they're building in Red Square, which I'm sure is probably costing them probably millions to build this set. If they, I would have been okay, Kartik, if they had said, you know what, we're going to have the studio set, we're going to have it in Los Angeles, we're going to have it in the Fox studio, and by saving that money and not having the actual studio set in Red Square, we'll go ahead and make sure that all of our commentators are in Russia at the stadiums calling the
games.
That
is actually what ESPN basically did for the 2011 Women's World Cup. Remember, they had their studio in did they have the studio in Germany?
Well, I don't think it was in Germany. It looked like it was in Germany. The set looked like it was in Germany.
And they had their studio hosts, which were Bob Lee and Rebecca Lowe, actually, just worked for ESPN, in Bristol. Same thing with the 2012 Euros, although they fooled people with that. But they had Bob Lee, Alexi Lalas, Michael Ballack in Bristol. But the talent calling matches was in Germany for 2011 Women's World Cup, and Poland and Ukraine for 2012, which is actually similar to being in Russia, right? 2012 in terms of just geography, etc. 2012 Euros. So they could have gotten away with that. You could move Rob Stone and the studio analysts to Los Angeles, and then make sure you send the Derek Ray, Ali Wagner team, the Follow Omiola team, the Davis Jones team. You send them to Russia. Maybe you leave one team behind, you call a few games. Well, actually, I don't think you leave any teams behind. You then call games off monitors from the IBC, as ESPN did the last couple World Cups.
Yeah, so David Neal, who's the Fox Sports executive producer for the World Cup, so he's the top boss in terms of presenting this event to the United States. He says, he was quoted this week, he says, really, there's no advantage if you're going to do a monitor call. It doesn't matter where you are. We've got the infrastructure here in Los Angeles, so there's really no reason not to avail ourselves of it. Now, going back a couple of years, in 2016, the same David Neal said, quote, we will be a larger group when we go to Russia in 2018 because the magnitude of the 64 games over 30 days requires a substantial number of people. And I understand the kind of the logistics of this. I'm Russia being such a large country, so many games, but they should be doing what Telemundo is doing. Telemundo is having most of the commentators at the games, at the stadiums in Russia, and then they're going to have a small crew that's going to be in the IBC, which is the International Broadcast Center in Moscow, and they're going to have them calling the games from there, off the monitor there. Now, they're in Russia. They're going to be in kind of that mindset in terms of knowing what's going on in the environment, being there, calling the games, just as ESPN did in 2014. I think they had 13 games.
In 2010, they had 7 or 8 games in South Africa in 2010 that were called from the IBC. And again, I mean, like I said earlier, ESPN understood that they couldn't get, Brazil was a big country, they couldn't get their teams everywhere, but they were feeling, living the atmosphere of the World Cup, being at the IBC, which was, I believe, in Rio. In 2014.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kartik. It does definitely feel like a top-down decision. You mean somebody above David Neal or above Eric Shanks within Fox Sports said, okay, hey, we got to cut corners here because we've already budgeted too much and we need to have the books look good. But that's the thing, though, to me, Kartik, is that you're going in with really what is mostly a B team of commentators, and you're going in hoping for some big ratings, which I'm sure they're hoping for still. But soccer fans are more intelligent than that. Soccer fans will, I mean, feel that they've been cheated. And I think many of them will go to Telemundo, watch the games on Telemundo, or will use VPNs and watch the games from overseas or wherever. But it's just a really sad, sad day, I think, for Fox Sports with their thinking this way. Because, like I said before, too, it's as if they're giving up, saying, okay, this is not going to work. And to me, the World Cup is much bigger than the U.S. men's national team. When the U.S. team got knocked out, I think both you and I, Kartik, said, you especially said, this is actually a good thing in many ways, too, because now at least Fox can look at the 32 teams and really kind of analyze them on a fair basis rather than going all in on the U.S. team. And that is the downfall of Fox, is that they've been all in on the U.S. team for years. That it's all about that U.S. team. So when the U.S. team fails, they're like, okay, what do we do now?
Well, they've been complicit in, but in fairness, I think it's a culture that's been created by Major League Soccer and the U.S. men's national team, or U.S. Soccer Federation, to make this sport, to try and appeal to fans on jingoism and nationalism, and that's basically the reason to watch soccer. And it's really a flawed strategy for MLS, a league which majority foreign now. This past weekend at Major League Soccer, 70% of the starters and starting 11s were not American. It's becoming a very cosmopolitan, diverse, and entertaining league for that reason. But they have marketed this for years. They have played on nationalism and jingoism and trying to appeal to people, saying this is the reason you should watch. Now Fox has been very complicit in that. But I think it's a strategy that's even been determined above Fox, a very shallow strategy, is kind of an us versus them, an exclusionary thing, very nativist in its raw appeals, even though I know people will bark back at me and claim otherwise, because there are a lot of people who are very cosmopolitan, diverse, independent thinkers who then fall into this vortex of USA, USA. But I think it's just the undressing of a strategy that has been sinister and cynical from the top of the game in this country for years. And then once the U.S. is out, it's like, oh my goodness, you know, this doesn't matter. This sort of thing. We have to almost discredit the event or just delegitimize the event because the U.S. isn't there. So, although there are reasons to critique and criticize this World Cup, which I will do as we get closer to it in both FIFA and Russia. But I think that, Chris, it goes back to an overall overarching strategy that has been in place for many years. I think out of a certain degree of insecurity and insularity, the insecurity about the popularity of the Premier League in this country and the popularity of El Tri and the Mexican national team in this country. Therefore, there was this overarching us versus them, one nation, one team, which is a bunk. There are a lot more people who support the Mexican national team in this country than the U.S. men's national team on a regular basis. And all of these sort of you're either with us or against us type very American messaging, which we see in global society, right? Which is why the United States has gone from one of the most admired countries in the world to one of the least admired countries. It's all manifesting itself in this. And unfortunately, Fox was a complicit partner in that, and they're paying the price.
Now, one of the narratives on social media to try to explain this has been that it's probably because of advertisers, not ponying up the money for the World Cup. I don't think that's true. So as of September 2017, this is according to Fox Sports, I think an article, I think it was an Ad Age, I think it was, they had already sold about 75% of their ad inventory. And this is back in September. So at this point in time, they should have already sold 100% of the ad inventory. Yes, the viewing numbers will be down. So there'll be less eyeballs and they'll be making less money. But it's... I don't know. I would love, actually, listeners, if you do have any theories why they're doing this, it would be great to hear, because it just doesn't make sense. Now, Kartik, are there any positives out of this announcement this week? Are there any names among the studio analyst or the studio host or the reporters that you think is some good news to come out of this Fox Sports World Cup?
Yeah. Okay. So obviously, I'm pleased about Ali Wagner and Derek Ray. I think that would be a great team if they were sent to Russia. I will still be probably as good as you can get on off a monitor. So I'm pleased by that. I've already registered. I'm not happy about Dunsett. I tend to agree with you on Winalda. I just want to withhold judgment on the reasoning up for it. And certainly disappointed about Costigan as well. And Rachel Panetta, I mentioned that earlier. I thought she would have a role. So that's interesting. The positives, I guess, are the return of Ian Wright. I know he's very polarizing. I happen to like him. Personal preference, just call it that. And so I like that. I'm glad Kelly Smith is going to be part of the World Cup team. She's got some great perspectives, having been a great English women's footballer, also having spent most of her playing career in the United States. So I think she'll be pretty good. I liked her. I've liked her analysis when they brought her in on things in the past. So I think that's good. Goose Heating being back is very, very good. And he knows Russia as well as anyone that they could potentially get. So that I like. Look, I say this every Champions League week. I was going to say it in our review of game matches. And so let's just do it now because it applies to the World Cup. I know Rob Stone is the big star of much of what Fox Sports does, and that includes college football and college basketball. And he is a soccer guy, and appreciate his more than two decades of advocacy for this sport and work in ESPN. I just think Kate Abdo gets more out of the studio team, the analysts that are there. She gets more out of Lala. She gets more out of Ian Joy. She gets more out of Barton. And Barton's obviously going to be in LA. But so I would take Rob Stone, but I would kind of switch I would have Abdo as the primary person and then Stone as the second person. That would be my opinion. But yeah, I mean, I guess there are some positives, but by and large, it's a pretty disappointing announcement. And this might also explain, Chris, why it took so long for Fox to make this announcement. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting week after week. It seems now month after month. And love to hear the listeners' theories. My theory is that there are major financial constraints within News Corp, or not News Corp anymore, 21st Century Fox, that are creating this. And we've got cover stories as to why it's happening. But the Disney asset sale was a red flag for me. I would have thought that's crazy that Fox was offloading all those and really some important properties. Now we're seeing that they weren't able to give a sufficient offer for Sky to take over the rest of Sky. That might have had some regulatory implications too, but still looks like Comcast might get that. So, which also then puts into question the larger asset swap. I think there's some with Disney. I think there's some issues at Fox.
Yeah, looking at the lineup. So some of the names, just for some of the listeners that haven't heard the news. So some of the studio analysts, well, all of the studio analysts, Gus Hiddink, who's decent, Hernan Crespo. I think that'll be an interesting
one. That'll be a good one.
Yeah, to see how, I'm not sure how he is, so we'll have to wait and see on that one. Alexi Lalas, Lothar Matthäus, Moises Munoz, who's actually really good, I think. Kelly Smith's good, Ian Wright. For me, Ian Wright, it depends which Ian Wright turns up. Sometimes he seems disinterested. Other times he's really focused and on the ball. But to me, I'm not going to go down the whole list. But the one positive thing is that Ian Joy is included. And I think he's one of the strongest analysts that Fox has. And he's in the role as a studio host. So it'll be interesting to see if he's there, in which role specifically.
Is that the best use of him?
I don't think so. I mean, really, I mean, we've seen for the Champions League this last few weeks is in terms of his analysis, you mean, in the studio as one of the analysts kind of debating and calling Alexi Lalas out and saying, hey, you mean about James Rodriguez and saying, okay, this is why he deserves more praise rather than just kind of the stereotypical, I mean, the same old things you hear on the social media or anywhere else you read. What do you think, Kartik? Do you think he's got a... I mean, he's such multi-versatile. You can put him in a bunch of different areas.
Yeah, I like him in both roles. I mean, it's kind of a tough one, but probably better as a studio analyst next to a Kate Abdo or a Rob Stone or whomever else. So, I would tend to agree with that. I think the studio team has some definite strengths in terms of the analysts they bring. Obviously, I think it could have been stronger with a Winalda or a Dunsett or even a Costigan. Costigan maybe even as a host. In some of the periods where you cover. So that's that, and then you shift Ian Joy over to the analyst chair.
All right. So as a segue, Kartik, I've got, I'm not sure if you caught this on the pre-match on the Liverpool-Roma game on Tuesday, but Keith Costigan was at Anfield and he was interviewing Jamie Carragher and he asked Jamie Carragher a question. So let me go ahead and play that, and that'll go right into our what we've been watching this past week.
Final question, Jamie. One of my colleagues back in LA, Alexi Lala, said Liverpool would be simply happy to be here in the semi-final. What do you make of those comments?
He should be happy to be in the studio.
Thank you, Jamie. Back to you, Rob.
Jamie throwing darts at you, my friend, from Liverpool. How dare he?
I've been saying that for years.
So I thought that was classic because it actually shows how much Warren Barton's improved in terms of his a little bit more relaxed, but a little bit, you get more of his character, more of his attitude onto the sets for the Champions League. And that's been a welcome change. And Lallis really been pointed as kind of somebody that's, I mean, he's on this, he's always been on this anti-Premier League rant for years in terms of thinking that the quality is much well below what people think it is. And with him critiquing Liverpool quite a lot this week. And then I just thought it was a really interesting little exchange there between Jamie Carragher and Keith Costigan and Warren Barton. So, Kartik, let's jump into that then. From the Champions League coverage from this past week, two big games, of course. What are your thoughts on how it went?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've already given my critiques of this, which is that John Strong and Stu Holden are very good, but they were calling the game off a monitor. There's a lot of value I've gotten from Holden when he's been at games, at match sites, and been able to call action of what's going on off the ball and kind of work that into his analysis. So thankfully for the World Cup, these two will be on site. One of only two teams that Fox is actually sending to Russia. The pregame shows, they were pushing fantasy sports thing. I thought that was kind of an poor taste. I didn't really appreciate that. But
yeah, well, for those who missed it, so usually on the Tuesday you have the Grant Wall 5 minute segment of news. But rather than do that, they did an infomercial, which is essentially an infomercial. They did, okay, now we're going to do a whole fantasy thing about, okay, the Champions League and, you mean, place your bets and use this promo code, and which they should have said, actually, is that Fox is one of the investors in DraftKings. I don't think they said that, but they're a huge investor in that company. So it's very self-serving of them to do it. But to me, it's just, again, you got a massive match between Liverpool and Roma, and then you're going on basically what's an advertisement.
Yeah, and it's an advertising for something that's very controversial,
right?
And is being investigated by various authorities and law enforcement authorities in this country. So I thought it was a very poor taste. I'm against daily fantasy. I won't get into it here, but I was offended, really, by it.
Yeah, and another thing that perhaps says something about that they're hurting for money, or at least, I mean, that gives that impression.
So preempt the news segment. I mean, whatever you think of Grant Wall, that is a news segment. Preempt that and put in this very, to me, offensive advertisement. It's just another, you just think Fox can't sink any lower, and you can't think like that.
I know. All right, so let's go on to other things, Kartik. So what else have you been watching this past week of interest to the
Yeah, Gladbach and Wolfsburg was a match on Friday that was on FS2 that was called by Steve Bauer, a familiar voice to us from NBC's Premier League coverage, and obviously ESPN during the Euros in 2016, with one-way traffic in that match. Wolfsburg is now really in relegation trouble again, like they were last season. But it was an entertaining match. Watched Kansas City and Vancouver on MLS Live / ESPN Plus. That was an exciting, really, first 12 to 15 minutes of that match were fantastic. And then Kansas City scored, and they were handbags, and Vancouver had two players sent off, ended up being a 6-0 game. Tim Melia, who is one of the better American goalkeepers right now, made a fantastic, what I think was a world-class save on Jordi Reyna in the first 6 or 7 minutes. If you haven't seen it, I suggest the listeners go and find it online and watch that. West Brom and Liverpool reduced Premier League scheduled this week, Chris. So Arlo White, Graham Lassoe were at this match. I don't think this is a match at the Hawthorns they normally would have called had it not been reduced to schedule.
This one, though, Conte, I do want to mention that I love the ending to the game because, of course, with the fight back with West Brom scoring that late equaliser, but the way that NBC handled it, because they... I love the ending to the game. So the NBC had just basically let the footage continue to run without talking over it, which they usually do anyway. But this one seemed to go on for about 3 to 4 minutes. And you saw Rondon getting a group hug from a whole bunch of young players, as well as a kiss from one of the fans. You saw just that emotion coming through.
This is another thing Fox doesn't do with their coverage of the Champions League. I mean, immediately at the end of these matches, Rob Stone starts talking. So... it's just, again, stylistic considerations with Fox are of great concern. Now, maybe that's what the American audience wants. I don't know. I don't know if they've tested it, if they've had surveys, if they've done some marketing research, because NBC certainly seems to think it's the opposite what the audience in this country wants. So that's a great point, Chris. Just finishing up on Saturday, the Dortmund-Leverkusen match, Dortmund at their finest. I actually expected Leverkusen probably to win this match based on what's been going on recently. But it was very, very good. Dortmund is finally fit with the exception of Batshuayi, who's been fantastic until he got hurt. Sorry, Chelsea fans, but that's at least how he's played since he got to the Bundesliga. Dortmund is fully fit with that exception, and it showed in this match. The FA Cup semifinal was preempted in the Miami Fort Lauderdale market for the Barbara Bush funeral, so didn't get to see that. Had a soccer doubleheader I then went to, which was the first ever match between two supporter-owned clubs in the United States, Himmershey FC versus Palm Beach United, and Himmershey won that match. And then Miami FC versus Miami United in what we're calling the Magic City Classico, the Miami Derby, which was a really entertaining game, also a chippy game, which ended 9-9 on Saturday night.
Wait, 1-1. 9-9?
Yeah,
players on the pitch. I thought you meant the score.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It ended 9-9. It was 1-1.
Okay.
And just for those of you who don't know, Miami FC is managed by Paul Dalglish, Kenny Dalglish's son. So been able to catch up with him since he's been in South Florida recently. Real quickly on Sunday, and I know you must have watched this Manchester City Swansea, Chris.
No. let me just add, Kartik, this one, I mean, again, I've seen thousands of games. This is probably one of the most painful matches I've ever seen. It was torturous because, I mean, City set up, Swansea let them play the game and Swansea just set back, hoping to hold on for probably a draw or maybe a goal on a counterattack. But Manchester City had over 1,000 passes, which was a Premier League record. Swansea had 17% possession. They had one shot on target the whole game, and that was from Alfie Mawson, the defender. This was one of the most torturous games I've watched in my life, and I had to sit through the whole thing. And full credit to Manchester City. I mean, it's a dream team, but this was painful to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just incredible. I mean, particularly, I think Bernardo Silva playing on the right side of the Manchester City attack probably touched the ball 500 times in the match, right? I mean, it was just, Fabian Delph playing at left back before they brought Mendy on was playing as if like he was a left-sided attacking player, playing so far forward. So, and Danilo as well, on the right side. It was painful from that regard. Watch Toluca Veracruz was very one-sided. Toluca was very good. Now let's get to the big game of the weekend in Europe, which was Juve and Napoli. Mm-hmm. First off, thankfully, BN showed this match. You just never know whether they're going to show matches from Italy if PSG happens to be playing or there's a big Spanish match. It seems like they'll always preempt matches for PSG. They want to show every PSG match live, which there's reasons for that, obviously. We don't need to get into it. I'm sure the listeners know. This match was interesting. I mean, you had said last week on the podcast, Chris, that you were concerned it was going to be this very negative, dour, classic Serie A affair. Well, it was. And Allegri made no attempt to play, right, with Juventus, until Buffon, and he's showing signs of age, he's shown him lately, instead of catching a ball or batting it in front of him, parried a ball wide from a shot from distance, and then the corner came and Koulibaly scored. And what it means now is that we have an exciting run in Serie A with four matches left. Juve's won the title six successive seasons, looking for seventh. Mm-hmm. They have a 1-point lead over Napoli, but they still play Inter and they still play Lazio or Roma. I think it's Roma. And there's a massive fight for fourth right now in Italy between Inter, Lazio, and Roma. So those matches are critical for the teams fighting for fourth. Napoli has a relatively easy running by comparison. So maybe we actually have a real bona fide title race now in Europe.
which is incredible to think of, in Kartik, is that you would think that most of the leagues in Europe would have this, but it's Italy that does, and it's been entertaining. I missed the match. I did see the highlights, and I'm not sure if this is the same commentator that was on beIN Sports, but the commentator that called the goal by Napoli in the last minute. I've got his name, but he's an English commentator, does a lot of the Serie A games, but just a great call, and he went crazy when Napoli scored. Just pure emotion. One thing I've noticed is that beIN Sports the last couple of weeks have been shifting their schedules. So oftentimes they would automatically put in a Liga match or a La Liga match on. But the last couple of weeks they've been putting the Serie A matches. They've been waiting to see which games are going to be most important. So for this weekend, for example, I think they've changed around their schedule a little bit to make sure that those Serie A matches are profiled. So for those listeners out there who want to watch some entertaining football and to see kind of a race go down to the wire, Serie A is it.
Yeah, and I should note that since the loss to Real, or whatever you want to term it, against Real Madrid, the controversial ending, Michael Oliver controversial ending, Juventus has not played well in Serie A. I mean, there's been a hangover effect. So the lead has gone from 6 points to 1 point in that period, that space of time between that match at the Bernabeu, that controversial ending, and today. So would this Juve recover? Who knows? Or have they just given up because of that, and you can see how emotionally that would cripple a team, even a veteran team like Juventus.
All right, TV streaming news, Kartik. So I did mention that Serie A is one of those title races going down to the wire. The other title race that's going down to the wire, with playoff spots open and the second automatic promotion spot, is the Championship in England, which is going down, which is really entertaining. So, Kartik, I haven't subscribed to ESPN Plus yet, and I know you have done. What's been your impressions thus far?
First off, on that subject, Chris, I'm rediscovering every day how many Fulham fans there are in this country. It's amazing. I mean, Saturday I go to this Palm Beach supporters match, and everybody there is keeping track of the Cardiff score. And then I find out the entire genesis of that club and the people who've been involved was because they were all Fulham fans. I'm pretty serious. Yeah, I mean, and they all met each other through watching Fulham games, which is a story that maybe newer fans to the game in this country don't understand, was the genesis of a lot of people's interest in football or English football in this country a decade ago or 5 years ago was Fulham because of the American influence. But and obviously Shad Khan is making some news now that we'll talk about another time. But ESPN Plus. So I went ahead and subscribed because I was having ESPN FC withdrawal. I went a couple of days without the show. It was difficult for me, and then realized that I wasn't going to get to see the amount of MLS or the Championship I normally watch. So subscribed. I thought it was it's complicated, right? It was difficult for me to actually subscribe, find where to subscribe first, okay, and get a proper link to subscribe. Then once I did, because I had signed up, I had once been an ESPN Insider member with my current email address. Now I signed up under a new email address, but then you'll forget the password, all of that stuff. I had to go through this whole rigmarole to reset my password, find my username, which was different than I thought it would be because it had been set up 15 years ago when I used to be an Insider subscriber and continued being an ESPN Insider subscriber while it was useful for like 3 or 4 years. So that was all very complicated. Then once I signed up, where do you actually watch the matches? What is the interface to watch the matches? I thought it was watch ESPN. No, it wasn't the Watch ESPN app. I was just giving me ESPN3 stuff. Maybe it's somewhere hidden there, but I couldn't find it. So I downloaded the ESPN app, which I didn't have on any of my mobile devices, honestly, because it's just, to me, it was just like, I don't need it. It's non-soccer stuff mostly, right? Mm-hmm. And I have an ESPN FC app that gives me all the soccer news, right? Their soccer app. So I download that, and then there is a tab which says watch, and then when you hit watch, there's an ESPN Plus tab. So then you go to the ESPN Plus tab. Once you go to the ESPN Plus tab, it's very easy to find ESPN FC every day. That's at the top. They have, you know, their featured shows, which are, you know, the usual things, PTI, that Dan Le Batard show, a hockey show, and ESPN FC. So you find it every day. No problem. It's at the very top of the page. MLS stuff, you kind of can find easily if you scroll down, because there's a whole tab that says, or a whole section that says MLS Live, and it's got the most recent MLS streams or the streams that are coming up. Now, this is a problem, though. They don't have a thing for you to set a reminder. So, for example, if you subscribe to NBC Sports Gold, or even in the past with ESPN3, if I'm not mistaken, you could say, hey, shoot me a text or an email, remind me about this match. They don't have that yet with ESPN Plus, so I'm finding MLS games and thinking, okay, I got to remember to watch this, but like that Kansas City game was talking about earlier. Thankfully I remembered that, but I might not have, because there's no way to click for a reminder. Finding championship and USL matches, the other two football related items right now I want to use the ESPN Plus service for, are incredibly difficult. You either have to get really lucky and jump on the app when those games are going live, jump on ESPN Plus when those games are on live, and they'll be at the top, like what's going on now. Or if you have to find an archive, you have to know the specific teams you're looking for. I assume, because I don't know that this thing was rolled out with quite the care and vetting that normally we get from Disney products, ESPN products. I assume this will evolve as time goes on, Chris, but right now it's a bit of good and bit of bad. I've also been playing around with the Bleacher Report Live, but there's really nothing on there yet. But they've actually launched, for those who don't know, and you can get the app, you can go through all of that now, but they're not going to charge you, I believe, until June or July for that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so the ESPN Plus, I haven't signed up for it yet. Reason being is just I've got so much soccer going on right now, I just don't have time to watch the championship. But once the Premier League wraps up and then going into the championship playoffs, I'm sure I'll sign up for it then. I don't really have any interest in USL, and I don't have any interest in kind of the regional local feeds of the MLS teams. So unless they add something in the summer, I'll probably hold off on doing it. I'm not sure. I guess the jury's still out on that, but that's good feedback, Kartik, and some good first impressions.
But when I talk to people, Chris, you know, you make a very strong point. People want to know, because we've reported on it, you've reported on it previously, the FA Cup Serie A thing. I've talked to a few people who say they'll wait until that happens to sign up. And if that happens, they will sign up because they want the FA Cup, the non-TV FA Cup matches, and they want Serie A.
Yeah, which I think would be a perfect fit for ESPN Plus. The challenge is that there's other streaming providers too that want to get those rights. So television but those two properties isn't a big priority for a lot of these TV companies, but the streaming companies want it because they know that there's some gold there in their hills. So moving on, Kartik, coming up on Netflix in 2018, we don't know exactly when, but there's a 6-part British series called The English Game, which looks at the invention of soccer. It's written by the creators of Downton Abbey, so it should be good. And it sounds really intriguing. This is something I would love to watch. And hopefully they go into the archives and show us a lot about the history that would really kind of educate and entertain us about how this game started in the first place.
It's funny. I actually have been thinking at some point, and it's so busy, I just don't have time, but I should reread David Goldblatt's The Ball is Round, which he wrote, I think, about 12 years ago, because even as I'm having discussions with South Americans about how the game was exported by British merchants to Uruguay and why Uruguay was so good in the early days of South American football and Argentina, I'm realizing I need to reread that book. So this will be right up my alley.
Yeah, I laugh only because The Ball is Round is such a... I mean, it's so detailed. It's such a huge book. It's like, I would need a summer, an entire summer of nothing to do. No World Cups, no soccer, to really kind of dig my teeth into it and read it. It is a fascinating read, but hopefully the documentary series will be something just as good as that. Moving on. So there was a report that worldsoccertalk.com released this week, which goes into a lot of detail for the TV ratings and TV viewership numbers for 2017. So we had Stefan Szymanski, the author of Soccernomics, or co-author, go ahead and actually analyze the data. So he looked at all the leagues in the United States on U.S. television, from Serie A to Major League Soccer, La Liga, Premier League, etc., and looked at how much of the actual viewing, what percentage went to each different league. And no surprises, Liga MX is the most watched, most viewed soccer league in the United States. Part of it is the accessibility, how easy it is for fans to watch the league, but also in terms of the numbers, the sheer numbers of people that do watch that league. What the numbers did show is that Major League Soccer represents 6% of all soccer viewing of soccer in the United States on U.S. television. Last year, it was 7%. So it's dropped a little bit, but 6%. So that puts things into context when people talk about soccer in general. When you're talking about Major League Soccer, that's just 6% of the viewing of soccer in the United States. I think the Premier League, I think, was about 29%, if I remember correctly. And the Liga MX is a lot more. But you've got so many different leagues from around the world that adds up to that 100%. But MLS is 6%. Kartik, let's move on to some news from FIFA this week, which could have some big implications on the world of soccer and television, too.
Yeah, the World Club Cup has been kind of this bastard stepchild of the football world, but might get an infusion. Gianni Infantino, FIFA president, has called a rare emergency meeting amidst a $25 billion offer related to a potential expansion of the World Club Cup. My understanding from talking to sources is that Major League Soccer and U.S. Soccer are opposed to this. I'm trying to do some more reporting to attribute the motive for that, but that's what I'm hearing. I'm also hearing that there's a lot of momentum for it from some other federations in this region and in the CONCACAF region. So that's a lot of money now. It would, again, further cluster the international football calendar and the club football calendar. So keep an eye on this space. This is potentially a huge story that's developing.
Yeah, one of the things they're looking at doing or suggesting is a Nations League for club teams. So you'd have the best teams from around the world playing in a competitive league structure, also a summer tournament. So a lot of these things would definitely shake up the world of soccer in terms of the already existing tournaments and competitions we have around the world. The other thing, too, is the investors. Nobody knows who the investors are. However, sources reveal that they believe that a lot of the money is from the Middle East and also from, I think, SoftBank in Japan. So there's some questions about who's actually driving this story. Who's the one that's actually the investors that have spoken to Infantino and trying to convince him to take the $25 billion, sorry, and have FIFA take that and give the rights over to this conglomeration, whatever it is, to actually run these tournaments or run these competitions. Last but not least, Kartik, some big news, actually. This is breaking news, is that Bleacher Report Live, which is the new streaming service, which you just mentioned a few minutes ago, they've added the Scottish Premiership to their list of games that they show. So, of course, starting this summer, they'll have the Champions League and Europa League. And very quietly, they've gone ahead and added the Scottish Premiership. Now, for the remaining part of this season, we'll have to wait and see about next season. But for fans of Scottish football, there's finally a place, not every single game, but there's going to be finally a place for some of those games to be shown free of charge to soccer fans in the US. All right, moving on to TV ratings, Kartik. Some big numbers and actually some disappointing numbers too. So the big number that came out from this past weekend was 804,000 for Manchester United against Spurs, the FA Cup semi-final. This was on Fox and Fox supporters combined. The number could have been much greater if it had not been preempted by the Barbara Bush funeral, which was shown in different parts of the country, depending on your local Fox. So 804,000 for that. The game, the Man City Swansea game, was 492,000 on NBCSN and Telemundo. And then you had everything else. You had, for example, Barcelona against Valencia on beIN Sports in Espanol had 229,000 viewers. New York Red Bulls against Chicago on Univision on Saturday had 281,000. In some ways, probably one of the most newsworthy numbers is Portland against New York City FC on FS1 on Sunday. That one had just 152,000 viewers. Again, Kartik, here we go again. It's an away game for NYCFC. You would expect the New York metropolitan area to be watching this game in numbers and to have kind of a nationwide interest in this game. Portland, I mean, having a tough start to the season, but still an attractive side, playing against NYCFC. And yet again, Fox is suffering from some poor numbers there.
Yeah, and NYCFC is good. So by MLS standards, I don't know. I get the impression that there are a lot of fans that just want to watch Toronto now and don't want to watch anywhere in Atlanta and don't want to watch anyone else in MLS. So MLS, in spite of all their talk about parity and people like Alexi Lalas touting the parity of the league, is becoming like any other league where there are two or three sides people want to watch and they don't care about the rest. And quite honestly, when Atlanta's on, we see higher ratings. I mean, it's just that's just a natural thing that I think is going to progress through the next few years. So they're not going to be able to stop that.
All right, TV. Actually, we've done the TV streaming news. Now we move on to listener mailbag. First up is Dave Brunk, and he sent this in through email. He says, "Good morning, fellas. Really enjoyed this week's pod. Thanks for your work on it. A few comments. I couldn't agree more about Team USA fans switching allegiances to root for Mexico this summer. I'm not surprised one bit. That's the stance. The entertainer Lalas is talking. It's ridiculous to me to think everyone would put their allegiances aside to root for the arch rival. Goes to show that Fox and their talent either don't get it or don't care for anything but the almighty dollar. Goalzone highlighting Man City's premiership championship was rather dull between the onslaught of commercials, the tired studio host, and I felt somewhat NBC beIN unprepared for the possibility of West Brom winning. The whole show was unimpressive. Last but not least, I'm still undecided on ESPN Plus. I'm thinking of pulling the trigger on the trial so I can watch the championship, then go from there. And yes, thank God for Andy Carroll. Come on, you Irons. All the best." Next up is Walt Whitman. Walt Waltman.
Wow, like Walt Whitman, yeah.
Posted a comment on World Soccer Talk. He says, "Fair warning to all regarding ESPN Plus." He says, "Okay, a neat event, and this is as good a place as any. I'm a New England Revolution supporter who lives 250 miles away from Foxborough, Massachusetts, in northern Vermont, to be precise. I was a happy MLS Live subscriber in years past. I understand the reason for a blackout policy and never complained, because while I technically live in the New England region, although nearly 4 hours away from Gillette by car, I could count on beIN able to see Revs games on MLS Live if A, they were playing on the road, and B, the match was not beIN carried live on one of the national networks, which Rev games rarely are. So when MLS Live got consumed by the Disney tsunami and landed on ESPN Plus, I dutifully signed up for a subscription I now will be canceling when the free trial period is over. I could not understand why the game against Columbus showed in my ESPN Plus account as blacked out when the game is beIN played in Ohio and not beIN broadcast on a national network. Well, I was just told by a customer service rep at ESPN Plus that on their service, I will be blacked out of every New England Revs game, regardless of where they're playing or who's carrying the live broadcast. and I will not be able to watch any Revs games, even as a replay, until 48 hours after the game has been played. Needless to say, this policy is completely absurd. I do not have a cable TV service and was perfectly willing to pay $5 a month for ESPN Plus, provided things were running in a reasonable fashion, like they used to be on MLS Live. But this blackout policy is bullshit. He says, the league and ESPN Plus have made a horrible mistake setting the service up like this. I'm not paying a dime to watch the soccer match I can't see until 48 hours after it's been played. So I posted this, Kartik, on social media to see, actually it was to Jonathan Tannenwald at the Philly Inquirer to see, get his feedback. And he said, yep, it's true. He said that that the games, the Revs games in that area are shown on the local NBC station.
So, NBC Boston,
So in this example, which I'm sure there's other examples in the United States, even though he's willing to, he lives 4 hours away from the area, even though he's willing to pay to watch these games, and because he doesn't have cable, he's cut out of it completely. And that's the thing about ESPN Plus is that it had been positioned as a cord-cutting solution, and it really isn't. It's really more of a kind of an add-on to existing cable services, really. You don't have to have cable, but if you do have cable, at least you get to see more games. But yeah, I don't know. I feel for Walt. This is a really, I mean, that's the type of thing that makes you lose fans, lose viewers.
Yeah, I'm actually stunned to hear this. I thought, again, it was being positioned as a service for cord cutters. So if you don't have access to NBC Sports Boston, to the Comcast Regional Sport Network there that has the Reds rights, this is a way of getting them via the MLS Live package, which is what MLS Live was for him and for so many other fans. This is something that they need to fix, or they're going to lose people.
Yeah. And Major League Soccer in general, I think it's way too complicated to figure out how to watch all the games anyway. It's such a regional setup. It all depends where you live. So if you say, okay, nationally, here's the policy, here's how you can watch games. Okay, we can only watch certain games, and the others you can't, because you have to then subscribe to ESPN Plus. But then depending on where you live and what local TV stations have the rights to those games, or streaming companies have the rights to those games, it's complicated. It's way more complicated than it should be. It's just a mess. Next up is Haddis through email. And Haddis says, I just have a general comment about VAR. I believe in VAR. We should embrace technology and use it to enhance and improve the game. However, we should not let perfect be the enemy of good. Bringing back teams from breaks to award penalty should not be acceptable. FIFA should get its act together and develop a clear policy and procedure on VAR use and implementation. Having said this, I have full confidence that Pierluigi Collina will do a great job in Russia. All of us who grew up watching his refereeing, his bald head and big scary eyes, with all due respect, should be hopeful that VAR will be fair. On a different note, those people who say that Americans will or should support Mexico and El Tri have no clue about the sport. Considering the soccer rivalry between US and Mexico, I don't believe a US supporter will root for Mexico unless he or she has some ties, as mentioned by Kartik in the previous podcast. These people should understand that it's much easier to change your job, break up with your girlfriend or boyfriend, or even get a divorce with your wife or husband, than supporting a rival club, especially a rival national team. And I completely agree there, Haddis. Last but not least, Ray Pyle posted this on Twitter. He says, any thoughts on Fubo TV not having True TV, TBS, TNT, or Headline News, who will have all the rights to the Champions League next season, no longer the best cord-cutting option for soccer now? Well, it's more complicated than that, unfortunately. And probably this next season is going to be the first time that cord cutters are going to really need more than one streaming service in order to get everything. And the challenge is that with the Champions League is that not all the games are going to be on True TV, TBS, TNT, or Headline News. Some of those games are going to be on streaming. And the Europa League, all the games are going to be streaming except for the final. So while Fubo, just as Sling TV, DirecTV Now, and others don't necessarily have all the channels that you'd want for soccer, you kind of have to pick and choose and figure out, okay, do I need Fubo for my Premier League and for La Liga and other leagues, and then pick up Bleacher Report Live for the Champions League? It all comes down to what you want. But it's a good question, Ray, and I appreciate the feedback. Now, you can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as on facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on the Mothership, the website that started this all, and that's at worldsoccertalk.com. All right, Kartik, it's been a big show, a lot to talk about, a lot of information, a lot of news, some breaking stories, and a lot of analysis. I've enjoyed it. I hope you too, listeners, have also. And Kartik, so where can listeners find you on Twitter if you want to stay updated on what you're doing?
My Twitter handle is KKFLA737.
All right, well, mine is @WorldSoccerTalk. All right, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, what should they do this weekend?
Enjoy your football.